Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
It's nice to be here with you, and I'd like to welcome all our listeners to the next chapter with Charlie. I'm Charlie Hedges, and this is a show where we deconstruct ideas and tactics that you might use to move on to your next chapter in life, whether that be large or small. My special guest today is TV personality Michelle Margot, who is a member of the Fox Sports San Diego team, where she primarily covers the San Diego Padres. I've heard of that team. She hosted the network's weekly TV show, Padres POV, or Point of View, in which she interviews players and probably coaches, I would imagine. Is that right, Michelle?
Correct.
Okay. Additionally, she serves as a fill-in sideline reporter for the Fox Sports San Diego Padres telecast, where she interviews players and anyone else that might be of interest to Padres fans. In fact, I was honored to do a couple 30-second to 1-minute interviews with Michelle. I guess 1 minute of me is all they felt they could handle.
We could have handled more.
Oh, I don't know. We'll find out today, won't we? Michelle is a California native and a graduate at the University of San Diego. Most recently, worked as a sports anchor reporter at an NBC affiliate in Corpus Christi, Texas. During that time, she served as a multimedia journalist and co-host of the show Friday Night Fever, which was a football show, as well as covering the Corpus Christi Hooks, which is the San Diego Astros, or San Diego, the Houston Astros, AA affiliate. I'm not sure if today's interview with Michelle is about her next chapter or her first chapter, since she just recently graduated USD and soon found herself working for an affiliate of NBC. I think that's a pretty cool job, Michelle, right out of school.
Thank you.
All right, it's enough background. What do you say we get this show on the road and talk to Michelle? Michelle, welcome to the next chapter.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, it's going to be fun. I have to admit, you know, I've been telling you this, but I have to admit, this is the first time I've ever been nervous conducting an interview. Here I am interviewing a professional interviewer. I mean, like, you do this for a living. And I do it for fun. I feel like my questions better be good, or you're gonna.
I think you're gonna be
me.
Just fine. There's no need to be nervous. And if this is you nervous, then I'm impressed.
Oh well, this is me nervous. But so, before we get into strategies you employed in your career that got off to such a great start, I want to know about your popular weekly episode, POV. What is POV?
So it is a magazine-style show. Like you said, it airs every week, about 26 episodes during the course of the season. It's a way for us to get to know players off the field. So obviously you watch the game broadcast. It's going to be all about baseball. And we take a player every week to do something other than baseball. And for an example, with your son, Austin, we carpooled with him to the ballpark one day before game day. And
let him drive?
We did let him drive. He was good. Minus a little hiccup, but we survived, so that's okay. You haven't seen it yet, so you don't know what I'm talking about, but no, he's good. We just get to know who these guys are off the field. It's our chance to ask them questions without them feeling under pressure and a time constraint, you know, trying to scout that day's pitcher or anything like that when they're at the field. So we get a little extra time with them, and it's a fun show.
And you get to know them kind of personally, too, as well, about their personal life.
Yep.
So fans get to know them. How many players have you interviewed over the last couple of years?
That's a great question. Hundreds.
Seriously?
Well, if you include my 2 years in Corpus Christi, yes, for sure. Because not only I've interviewed every guy that's come through our ball club, but I'm also on the other side of the field sometimes talking to other guys who are former players or former Padres, or they have relationships with the Padres, or there's some form of connection there, or anything really. So if they're having a really good season on their end, sometimes we'll go ask them, you know, what's been their key to success.
And if they're not having a very good season,
then we leave them alone. And that's what we like. We like the opponent not to have good seasons.
Oh, so a true Padre fan.
Yes, through and through.
That's good. That's good. I know you've interviewed my son, but I haven't seen that because I live in North Orange County, so the show doesn't come on. But you promised me you're going to send the interview.
I promise you,
my
I will.
Son, so I get to see that.
Yes,
that'd be nice. I have a question for you. Tell me, have you ever been intimidated by a player?
That's a really good question. Yes and no. That's like asking Kobe Bryant if he's ever been intimidated by an opponent. Of course he's going to say no. Just because if you're intimidated, what are you doing your job? I would say there was a time that I was intimidated during the All-Star game interviewing Reggie Jackson, former player, Hall of Famer. It was interesting because it was 4 months into my job. And it was a total different setting. We were at a casino, and he was talking to a bunch of fans, and I had to do an interview with him. And I was intimidated. I don't know why. I think because I knew of his accolades, and I grew up a Yankees fan. I don't know. I don't know what it was. But it soon subsided because he called me by name within the first answer. I asked him a question. He said, "Well, Michelle, blah, 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 blah." And I just thought, okay, I feel better. Like, it was just, he knew how to be really personable. And I don't know why. I'm, other than his great success, I don't know why, because I've interviewed many people that are all-stars now and stuff, and it's not as intimidating. But there was something about him that was a little intimidating.
Yeah, he is. He's kind of up there in rarefied air.
Yeah.
I work out at a gym that he works out at.
And oh, really?
Yeah.
That's impressive.
I give a hype to Equinox and Irvine.
Are they paying you for that product placement?
I wish they would, because
they are
pricey. But he's really a nice guy.
Good.
He's really a good guy. Tell me now, you interview a lot of different personalities. Mm-hmm. And so some are really extroverted and really easy to interview. But there are those that are introverted and maybe kind of hard to get something out of. What tactics do you use if someone is not really talkative and you want to get a good interview out of them?
The journalist in me would ask the same question a different way if I'm not getting the answer that I want. But I've been really lucky in the sense of most guys are, even if they're introverts as human beings, they know my job and they know their job is to answer, you know, like the questions that I'm asking. And so, that helps. But it's not necessarily the introverts that aren't good at talking on camera. So I understand it. I mean, talking on camera is not for everybody. And believe it or not, like sometimes I think it's not for me. I am outgoing, but I definitely have a shy side. And talking.
Wait a minute.
Yeah,
you have
no, it's true.
Shy side.
Yes.
Where?
I swear.
Where is? What side of you?
I mean,
that?
Ask my parents. I didn't. When I grew up, I was always hiding behind my parents' legs, and you know, being introduced to their friends and stuff like that. That's why it's crazy that I fell into this job. I didn't fall into it. Obviously, I worked my butt off my whole life to do it. But it was not. I don't know. I used to act when I was little, like doing theater and stuff, and I thought I wanted to do it, and then I'd get on stage and I hated it. It was so scary, but I loved it, but I hated it, if that makes sense. And it's same now. Like if I'm, you know, talking to a class, or if I, you know, had to give a presentation in school, I hated the attention. I hated doing it in front of people. Cameras are different because you're not seeing everyone's face staring back at you. You're seeing a lens. But I understand the players are there to play, and a huge portion of their job is connecting to fans, which is, you know, via us. We're the liaison.
Sure.
But I understand if they don't want to talk. It's not what they are here to do, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Now you said it's not necessarily the introverted personality that's difficult to talk to. What personality is difficult to interview?
Some guys are superstitious and they feel like if they talk on camera after they got a home run that night, they don't want to do it because the next day they'll strike out, you know, four times or whatever. It's those guys, or the guys that it's the guys that don't think it's important, I guess. Like, I think that some players don't understand why they have to talk to media.
Are those newer players or older players?
Like I said, I've been really lucky in the sense of I don't get them very often. It's only happened maybe 2 times or 3 times in 3 years of being in this industry. So I get really lucky. But just from what I've seen or what I've heard of other players. Also, the other thing is there are guys who are really big name players and they talk and answer the same questions time after time after time. And, you know, it stinks for us because in San Diego, we don't always get to talk to the Nationals or we don't always get to talk to the Yankees. And so when they are in town and we want to hear from them and they're being asked questions that they're asked every day in New York or DC, it's hard for them to, like, you know, be patient. So I also get that as well. But again, we have a job to do. And
so do you
hope
try
to understand that
with people like that, do you try to get creative and ask them unusual questions that aren't normally asked of them?
I try to ask questions that I want to know the answer to. One of the reasons I got in this industry is because I grew up a Sacramento Kings fan. And when I was little, I would watch the players and the coaches, and I always wanted to know answers to questions. And I would ask my dad, and he'd say, I don't know. And it was like, I want to ask them. Like, I wanted to be able to have that access to ask the question. Like, I'm 12 years old, Michelle, sitting in my family room wanting to ask Chris Webber a question. And I can't do it because I'm 12 years old sitting in my living room. But I want to be able to provide that access to fans that don't otherwise get that. And so when I ask a question, it's usually something that I would want to know if I was a fan. And that's my rule of thumb.
So, you know what it sounded like to me, too, that it's that you're a very curious person.
That's
not
accurate.
Just about athletes, but it sounds like you're just curious, that carries out throughout your life.
100%.
Yeah, I am very much the same way. That's what that's what this show is all about. It's about really, I know there's listeners, but I'm sorry, listeners,
it's
not about you. It's about me trying to find out because I'm curious about
Michelle.
I wouldn't
go that far. It's definitely about the viewers and the fans for me. I mean, there are times when the camera goes off and I say, okay, off the record, and then I ask a question because I know that they aren't going to give me that answer on camera, but it's information for me for my own benefit in the sense of trying to understand or comprehend something. Yeah, I mean, I definitely am here for others. I'm not in this job for myself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. And you know, one thing I'm impressed that you do, and I've seen your style a few times of interviewing when you're interviewing someone else, and I have a list of notes of questions that I may ask and I may not ask, and I like to have a, you know, ongoing dialogue. And so, like right now, I'm not even looking at my notes. I don't know what next question would be. But I notice that's what you do. You really don't have a list of questions you're going to ask them. It's kind of like you're ad-libbing as you're going along.
It depends what I'm doing. During post-game interviews, there have been many times where the game changes and then there's 3 super quick outs on 5 pitches and then you're out there and you have to talk to guys. So it's like in those situations, I can't sit there and plan every single thing, but I have a general idea. Also, the story of the game kind of tells itself. So that's usually what I go off of. For Padres POV, that's very much ad lib. I will do research on the player. And if there's something specific I want to ask, I make sure I write it down so that I don't forget. For example, with your son, Austin, he walks out to George Michael's Careless Whisper. And everybody wanted to know why he did that. There was some curiosity in me too, I'm not gonna lie.
And what did he say? I think I know the answer, but I'm just curious. What did he say?
Well,
because let's tell the fans that a walk-up song is usually some hip rock and roll loud,
something to pump you up.
Yeah, pump some. And then he comes out to George Michael's Careless Whisper.
Yeah. Well, I'll explain his answer in a second. I don't want to butcher his answer, so I hope I get it correct. But basically, everyone wanted me to ask that question. Everyone's been asking me that question all season long. I didn't have an answer, and there was never a time where I was just like, hey, Austin, why do you walk up to that? And that was my opportunity to ask him, and I did not want to forget. So I had that written down. And so I made sure that I asked that. But when it comes to writing things down, it totally depends. If there's something I need to ask, I'll write it down so that I don't forget.
So you just have, it's just like little notes. Cheat sheet notes.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not like me where I have actual full questions.
No, because it takes too long to look down and reference for me.
And you're on camera.
Correct. So I can't always be looking down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would look awkward.
Yeah. Austin's answer, I believe, and I really don't want to get this wrong, but I believe it was because Ryan Buchter, who was a former Padre,
right.
now Kansas City Royal, when they played together in AAA, I think, I guess Austin really likes saxophones, or he listens to music with saxophones in him. I don't know his iPod repertoire, but I think like he likes like EDM or
he does. He likes EDM a lot.
Okay, so you do know. So there, I guess there's a lot of saxophone in it or something like that. And he said, "Well, you're the sax man. You need to walk out to something." And so George Michael was the best.
No kidding.
Wait, so that's you've never asked your own son why he walked out to that? You just have just been like, okay.
I was talking to Ryan and
Buchter.
To Ryan Buchter and to Austin together. I think it was when we made that trip to Arizona where they took on Father's Day. It's really cool, folks. The Padres took on Father's Day, took all the dads on a team charter flight to Arizona.
Yeah.
And so we got to meet all the players.
It was cool.
And so Austin and Ryan were talking, and Ryan was proud to say, "Hey, it was my idea.
Okay.
And he walks up to that silly song.
That's so funny.
Yeah,
well, now, it is taken off, I'll tell you that.
Hasn't it? At first, everybody laughed at it. At first, everybody thought it was
everyone thought it was
stupid.
Hilarious. No, not stupid. Everyone thought it was hilarious.
And now it's become kind of like...
Yeah, he has his own section
called
the Hedges Saxy section. So it's taken off. And I think, and the good thing about Austin, which I'm sure you understand, is he is more focused on his job than he is on that. And so I think he is happy about it, but I don't think it consumes him. I think some players would let that become a thing, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah. He doesn't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's change tracks just a little bit here. I'm curious, you're in a career that is unusual for women, not really unusual for women, but sports broadcasting is much more historically a male thing. We'll talk about the women aspect later, but I'm just curious, how did you get into broadcasting? What was the drive to do that, to major in that?
I did not major in it, actually. I majored in communication and minored in political science. And communication was all about, like, interpersonal communication, family communication, not, like, media.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So where I went to school, there was no journalism major. In fact, so when I was 8 years old, you can ask my parents this, we have videotapes of it, I would stand in front of a life-size dollhouse and use the pseudonym Sally Kelly. And I would give the news as Sally Kelly. Don't know why, looking back, I look ridiculous, but that was 8-year-old Michelle doing what she wanted to do.
Do they have video of that?
They do. I haven't seen it, but I know, I mean, I remember my mom filming it, so I'm going to have to talk to her and tell her to dig through. But, or maybe not. Maybe no one needs to see that. Who knows? But that was when it started. I mean, I was 8 years old and I knew I wanted to do it. I loved having a microphone in my hand. I was not good enough at singing. And so that was like what I wanted to do. And then, got to middle school and was on the middle school news, got to high school, was on the high school TV broadcast.
Where the heck did you go to high school?
Well, it was called Del Campo Television, but then I transferred to Bella Vista and I didn't end up doing it at BV, but, and then got to USD. And I got recruited to do crew from high school to college. And I quit crew while I was in college in order to do USD TV.
Were you on a scholarship for crew?
No. Long story short, it's a long story in the sense of like, there was like credits missing and all this stuff. And so I had a red shirt and I didn't want to do that, but basically the end all be all decision was USDTV conflicted with practice, and I wanted to do USDTV, so I quit. My parents were totally fine with it. But I wanted to either go into law or be a special education teacher. And then after doing USDTV and after my freshman year of college, I had to get an internship. And instead of getting something in a law office, I went to a news station in Sacramento. And all of this was news. None of this was sports. This was all news. And then when I went...
And not the weather.
And not the weather. There was a time where I considered like entertainment news, and then I couldn't do it. Just because it's just, to me, I think my brother and my dad would never be able to look at me seriously if I did entertainment. But I went to this news station for an internship, and that day, or one of the days, Kawhi Leonard, who's a San Antonio Spur, went to San Diego State, played basketball there. He was being looked at and scouted by the Sacramento Kings. And I, being from USD, knew who Kawhi Leonard was and was like, this is so cool. Can I go with the sports guys today so I can see Kawhi Leonard up close and see what the Sacramento Kings do, blah, blah, blah. So they let me go with the sports guys. And that day was the day that literally changed my life, because I never looked back at news again. I never considered doing news again, because it was so different going on shoots with the reporters that were going to houses after they found their kid drowning, or going to a fire, or going to a shooting, or going to a car accident, to going to the Sacramento Kings practice facility for a team that I grew up watching, and for a guy that I was currently watching in San Diego. I just never looked back. I want to do sports from here on out. And that's what I did the next year. I interned here at Fox Sports San Diego. And so the rest is history. Long story for a short question. My apologies.
Well, no, but that's very fascinating. I really want to get to the women aspect. I'm leaving it as a teaser, because I want to go to one other question.
Yeah.
And as I read through your resume, I saw that you did editing. You do a lot of editing. Is that right?
So when I went to Corpus Christi, they call the reporters one-man bands, or MMJs, multimedia journalists. So every day I would go shoot my own story, write my own story, edit my own story, produce my own story, report, obviously, all for the 5 or 6 o'clock news, and then turn it around and air it.
How long is the airtime?
A minute, 15 seconds.
And then how long is the editing time?
Well, in news, you get it done in about 4 hours. It's different here. We have a whole week to put something together for the show. So.
And you do the editing here too?
I started to last year for the first half of the season, and you quickly learned that the guys that edit here are, and women that edit here are, much better than I am. So I leave it to them now.
But that's fascinating. You just said for a minute and a half airtime, you would spend 4 hours. And
yes,
that's short. You consider that a short amount of editing.
Yes. Think about it. If you watch a news story, so usually it starts with a reporter doing a stand-up, or maybe it doesn't. Maybe it starts with a voiceover, a track. So you, first of all, in order to write creatively, it takes time. You can't just, I mean, some people it doesn't, but for me it does. So that in itself takes a little bit. Then while you're at the shooting, or while you're at the car accident, or while you're at the practice facility, or wherever you're going, you have to get enough B-roll or footage
right.
to cover however much you need, because while you're talking, you have to be seeing something, and you're only doing a stand-up for 8 seconds or 10 seconds of that minute and 15, if that makes sense. So you're shooting a ton while you're there. Then you're getting the interviews.
So you could have 10 or 15 minutes of B-roll.
Oh, yeah. Plus 10 or 15 minutes of interview, and you have to edit that all down to 1 minute and 15 seconds, because in a 30-minute newscast, it can't be all about you. You have a minute 15 seconds for your story.
Well, it's hardly about you at all in a minute and 15 seconds.
Well, it shouldn't be. That's not the job. But yeah, so that's what I did in Corpus.
Oh, so that's why I only got a 1 minute interview.
Well, yours was during a broadcast, and you can't miss a pitch. So they had to show what was going on in the game.
Can't miss a pitch in the game. She's talking about a baseball pitcher throwing a pitch. Just so they know. Okay, so we're going to take a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to get into what I think are some fun questions. So let's take a quick break here. Hi, everyone. This is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie and my special guest, Michelle Margot, who is a professional interviewer with Fox Sports here in San Diego and working primarily with the San Diego Padres. And we have been talking about how she got into the career. Now I want to talk about your gender in this sport. My wife and I are, as most people know, are very, very strong advocates of women in business. We do a lot of work for women in business. And even our philanthropy is about women and children. You know, that's just where we are. So I'm really curious, what am I curious? Oh, here we go, just looking at my question. Tell me about being a woman as a sports broadcaster with all men. You're not doing women's sports, you're doing male sports. Do you face any, are there any difficulties you face with that?
I think it's self-explanatory. There are times, but overall, I try not to focus on that just because the more we make it an issue as women, the more it's going to be one. So if I don't make any excuses for being a woman, or if I don't point out the fact that I'm female, then hopefully it will not be as noticed, if that makes sense. And there's nothing wrong with being a woman, obviously, but I'm doing my job, and whether I'm male or female, it shouldn't matter.
So I'm curious. My really curious question here is, do you go into the locker rooms?
Every day. Almost every day, yeah.
Every day?
Almost every day, yeah.
Like after games?
Before and after.
Before and after. Are there, now, I got to ask, because everybody's wondering, are there guys running around naked in there?
I'm sure. I don't pay attention. I'm usually so focused on what I have to do.
You really are. You're very focused on your job. I've watched you a lot.
Yeah. So I don't really pay attention. I mean, I'm sure there are. I mean, everyone's changing, but unless the guy that I need that second is changing, in which case I see the second he starts to take off his shirt, I turn around or I look down. I don't, you know, my job is my job. So
yeah. Yeah. So do you think, how do the players feel about it?
I have no idea. You should ask. I think they're probably used to it by now.
Yeah. Cause it's pretty, now how many women would be in there? Are there a lot of women?
In our clubhouse, not very many. Usually it's myself and maybe a production assistant, or maybe a public relations person.
Maybe Maddie in there.
No, she doesn't go in there.
Oh, she doesn't.
Are you talking about social media, Maddie?
Yeah.
No, she doesn't go in there. She doesn't need to. What would she be?
I don't
tweeting
know.
And Instagramming that her guy's changing. No. I think she pretty much stays away from the clubhouse. The only reason you need to go in there, and I do not stay in there unless I have to. If I've gotten what I need for that day, I go outside.
It's just for an interview.
It's for an interview. If I need to confirm something or something like that, there's an allotted time every day that media can talk to the guys. And it's called media clubhouse time. So, it's usually in there. And if I get what I need, I go outside and I sit in the dugout until it's time to talk to the manager that day.
Until it's time, do you talk to the manager every day?
Mm-hmm.
Do you? What do you talk about?
No, the press conference, like the pregame press conference.
Oh, the pregame press conference. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Because see, I'm thinking after the game.
I'm
thinking postgame, and not pregame. So you speak with Andy a lot.
For the most part, in scrums, which is like when everyone's around. I mean, I don't talk to him on the daily one-on-one.
My son says, we'll talk about Andy Green a bit here. My son says Andy Green is one of the smartest men he's ever met. And we talk about his agent, who everybody knows, Scott Boras. And I say, Scott may be the smartest man I've ever met. And he said, Dad, you got to know, Andy gives him competition.
Yeah, Andy, well, I'm sure they're both very smart men. They're both very successful as well. I mean, I don't know Scott Boras personally, but Andy Green is, Austin's 100% correct in saying that. He is so quick-witted that, like, I will come up with something, like a moment in the game, and he's already thought of like 50 different scenarios that could have happened or 50 different things that could have played out, but didn't. Like, he's just, I don't know how there is so much capacity in his brain, but he's got so much intelligence. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I can't wait till we can we get the team around him and see what happens when he's got it, when he's really got a seasoned team, because, you know, we're so young,
right?
And we really are.
You know, we. You're on the team too, right?
Yeah, I am saying, well, you know, my son, I'm sorry.
No, you count, you count.
I shouldn't be saying that, should I?
It's hilarious. No. I say it sometimes too, and it's definitely not my team.
Well, but it
is. I'm not on the Padres.
But it is our team. We're San Diego, so it's our team.
Yeah. Yeah, that's arguable for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I already asked you that. Tell me, now, you said you were a basketball fan. Have you always been a baseball fan as well?
No. In fact, not until I was maybe 17. My parents did not grow me up watching sports at all other than the Kings, and that was just because it was their prime time. And even then, it was just like my dad had the game on when he got home from work, and in order to spend time with him, that was the way we did it, which I'm very thankful for, because had he not, I don't know if I would be in sports at all. But my brother, not super into sports. I mean, he likes tennis and stuff, but my dad, definitely not into sports. He understands sports, but not into them. And, baseball was never something we did. Sacramento River Cats are the AAA. Well, they were the AAA team for the A's. Now they're the Giants, I believe. But we kind of went to those games, for fun. Like, it was like, oh, there's going to be fireworks. Let's go watch fireworks after the River Cats games. But I understood there were three strikes, you're out, but I did not understand anything else. I learned all of what I know from the last 7 years.
Yeah, baseball is not an easy sport.
No, it's not.
No.
It's not at all. And I'm learning every day. Once you think you have it, there's something else that you realize you don't.
You know, that's been my experience. You know, I coached for so many years, and I coached youth baseball, but at a high level. We had, you know, proud to say, you know, we had nationally ranked teams and won 6 out of 7 state championships. And I've got 6 big league players. This is more than some colleges. I have 6 league big league players that played for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Who?
What? Harper?
Bryce
played,
Harper?
Bryce Harper,
okay.
Played for me. Joe Musgrove with the
Astros.
With the Astros. Zach Davies with the Brewers. Austin, Matt Chapman with Oakland A's, and then Michael Lorenzen with the Cincinnati Reds.
Oh my goodness.
All those guys played for me.
That is hilarious.
That, I mean, they're colleges that don't have 6 players.
That's cool, though.
I'm probably a Guinness Book of Records.
They should put you in there.
Well, yeah. let's give Guinness a call. Except if we gave Guinness a call, I'd probably be the beer company, and we wouldn't be.
Which wouldn't be bad either.
So I've read that you're a very driven woman, and you've even made the statement, said, I've always wanted to work and always wanted to make money for myself. Success motivates me, and I have a fear of being mediocre. I work 24/7. And it can be bad at times, but I love it. What is going on with this fear of being mediocre? Because you are far from mediocre.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I don't know where it stems from. I really don't. My dad has always said that I was the kid he didn't worry about in terms of not being successful, but ever having a job, because he never once had to tell me to get a job. I remember trying to sell bookmarks when I was 10, like for 10 cents, just to work. Which is so weird now that I look back. But what a freak of nature kid. But I don't, I've seen a lot of women put their work or let their work fall to the wayside or whatever to support their husbands, which is very selfless and awesome. But I think I would resent somebody or something if I never worked again in my life. And so I don't know how to explain it, but I've always wanted to be the best at whatever I do. And it's not even a competition thing necessarily. It's just a thing to like feel fulfilled. It's not about being better than others. It's just about feeling satisfied with what I've done, if that makes sense. And people say, oh, your parents must be so proud. I'm like, my parents are proud of me when I've been a good person or when I've done something for somebody else. They aren't, I'm sure they're proud, but they're not driving me to go to the top. They're not telling me that I need to do this. They were never saying you have to get straight A's. They never said any of that. I just didn't want to feel like a failure to myself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's I want to pursue that. Let's go into that a little bit, because I think a lot of our listeners, you know, in listening to the next chapter, we're talking about moving on to a new phase of life, moving on to doing something different, and there's often a lot of fear of that because you're moving on to a career,
understandably so,
that they have no idea what you're doing, and it sounds like you've been able to fight that fear and deal with that fear is it through your desire to win? Is it through competition?
It's not about competition and it's not about winning. It's not about being better than the next person. It's about beating my own personal goals. When I graduated college, all of my friends were traveling. All of my friends either stayed in San Diego or went to Bali or Thailand and went to all these cool places, or Australia, New Zealand, which, by the way, definitely on the bucket list still. But I instead moved my entire life to Corpus Christi, Texas, which is not the most desirable city in the United States.
No, since Corpus Christi.
For those of you who can't see, Charlie is nodding his head no. Yeah,
not listening. We probably don't have any listeners of Corpus Christi.
Well, it was a good place for me to learn. But I knew not a single person when I moved out there. And a lot like what Austin had to do, or what a lot of these guys have to do, is move away when they're 17 or 18 years old. I guess I was 21, which is different, but they don't have anyone.
That's still young.
Correct. But you know, those guys have a team when they go play for the summer once they get drafted or whatever. I went and my days off were Monday and Tuesday. So even if I wanted to go have fun on the weekends, I was working. And if I had my days off, I had no one to hang out with because I was off on Monday, Tuesdays. So it was a miserable experience for a while. I made a lot of really good friends that I'm still very, very close with. A lot of talented people that I'm super thankful were there to guide me and mentor for me. But it was, when people said, like, you're crazy, I was like, no, this is what I want to do. And when I was there, I was like, I'm crazy. What am I doing? And that, how I dealt with that was I did what I could every single day to be the best that I could be. So honestly, that I could get out. And that sounds terrible. And I don't mean it in a bad way. I loved everyone.
Why does
everyone.
That sound terrible?
Well, because it wasn't, it sounds like, oh, I just wanted to get out of Corpus Christi. I was thankful. Very thankful for everyone that I met and gave me an opportunity and all the things that I learned, and I would not take it back for a second. But I had a 3-year contract there, and I was gone in 1 year and 7 months, and I did everything I could to be gone as fast as possible because I wanted to move on to the next step. And a lot of people were like, oh, make the most of your time in Corpus Christi. And my mentality was, no, make the most of the opportunity that you're given and then get out of Corpus Christi.
Oh, no. See, that is great, because that is the advice. That would be the normal advice. Make the most of your time.
Yeah.
And you're saying, no, not make the most of my time. Make the most of my opportunity.
Correct. So they're saying on Monday, Tuesdays, when you're off, go explore, which I did. But what I did Wednesday through Sunday was worked my butt off and I was not there to make friends. I was not there to find a boyfriend. I was not there to go explore Texas. That's not why I was there. I was there to get exactly what I needed. I needed to get out my mistakes in a small market. I needed to learn how to read off a prompter naturally. I needed to learn how to edit, write, shoot, produce, social media, talk on camera without making a fool of myself and doing it in a big city. And that's what I tried to do when I was at Corpus Christi.
So what I'm taking from you, if somebody's going to go into a new career, it's really about taking advantage of that opportunity, learning as much as you can about it. You said the key thing, and it's work ethic. It's working your butt off.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, you just cannot beat hard work.
And I was not doing what I wanted to do for the first year. I went there to do sports, and I did news for the first year. And then I got promoted to weekend sports anchor. I was doing that for 7 months before I came here. So, and I've had reporters that are still there contact me and say, I don't know what to do. I'm not happy in Corpus Christi, blah, 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 blah. And by the way, Corpus Christi is way better than a lot of other places we could have been.
Oh,
so let me just start with that.
You could have been in Midland.
We definitely played Midland, I'll tell you that. And my advice to that reporter or those reporters is don't look that far ahead. Take it day by day, because you cannot sit there and be like, I have 2 years left on my contract. You can't do that. It was really hard not to do that while I was there. And trust me, there were countless nights where I was miserable, but, a lot like the minor leagues, you can't sit there and be like, well, I'm in rookie ball. It's going to take me 3 years to get to the big leagues. If I even get there, you have to take it at bat or pitch by pitch and have 1,000 at bats until you're good enough or until you have enough experience or whatever it may be to get to the big leagues. And that's the same mentality that I took. I took it story by story. Every day was a rat race. Every day was a new story. Every day was a new broadcast. And my goal was to kill it that day, and the other stuff would come.
That's funny. It reminds me of a really great author, Anne Lamott. Do you know Anne Lamott? She's really a fine author. She's written a book on writing, and it's called Bird by Bird. And the story was that she was her brother was what do you call bird watchers?
My parents. Seriously. You get binoculars and bird books and bird feed. I'm like,
yeah, I can't remember, but he had to memorize a 1,000 birds. And what? And she asked, how in the world are you going to do that? And he said, bird by bird.
That's the way
you do that. And that's the same way with she said about writing. How do you write? How do you get, it's bird by bird. It's story by story.
Yeah.
You were saying pitch by pitch. Yours is story by story, episode by episode, interview by interview, and you just continue with that.
Yeah.
And I think, and is that advice you would give to somebody starting a new business?
I think it depends on the industry, but yeah, if you are focused on getting that promotion in 6 months, you're not going to get that promotion in 6 months. You have to focus on you doing your job right, the right way before that happens. And I think I've talked to guys in baseball that they were starters in college, and then they were starters their first couple seasons in pro ball, and then they were relievers, and they were unhappy, and they didn't want to be relievers. And I'm like, well, don't focus on that, because obviously that's hard. If you're not doing what you want to be doing or what you think you should be doing, it's hard, and it's hard to accept. But if you're focused on doing your job the best you can, the other stuff will come. And I think it's the same way with guys that are hitting. It's, if you're focused on getting to a certain, goals are always good. Goals are always good. But I think that if you are focused on hitting numbers rather than just doing your best that day, focus on trying to get one hit in every 3 or 4 at bats, and then you worry about the rest.
I love it. I think that's tremendous advice. I noticed when I remember when I was in business, and I never did any marketing. I had a consulting business, and I was an executive coach. I did no marketing. My marketing was to kick butt that day.
Yeah.
Whoever I was working for, whatever I was doing, to be the absolute best I could be that day and be the best, not for me, but for my client, to serve my client the very
That's
best
awesome.
I could every day. And if I could do that, and all of my marketing was word of mouth.
You that's know, awesome.
Go see, and that's the same thing with you, is you have to do that. You have to be, every interview has to be the best interview you've ever done.
Exactly. And that's also the same thing, because it's the same thing in baseball or any sport that you are playing every day. You got to leave it on the field, because if you mess up, you cannot take that into the next thing that you do, because it will ruin you. And
except you take the lessons.
You take the lessons, but you don't focus on, oh, I messed this up. Like, people say, oh, or even my own parents, love them to death, but they will point out a reporter, oh, she said too many times. I'm like, okay, if someone's biggest critic says that you say too much, or if the biggest criticism that you get is that you're saying too much, that's not bad. Everyone says You know what I mean? That's not, you're doing your job poorly, or you aren't smart, or you're not knowledgeable on the subject. That's not it. You know what I mean? So you have to be able to leave it on the field and take the next thing in stride, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, I think it's we're getting near wrapping up, but every time I get near wrapping up, new questions come to my mind. And I noticed, you know, one thing you don't do that I'm just noticing now, you don't say but you also don't have little habit phrases. Everybody has little habit phrases. I listen to myself and I know, so, and I'll say, and all that.
Oh, you haven't said that once.
No, because I quit saying that.
Oh.
Because I listen to myself, which I can't stand. I don't know about you, but I cannot stand to listen to myself.
I had a conversation with my dad the other day, and I was like near tears because I was just so upset about something. And I was driving, and I was venting and talking. And at the end of it, I was waiting for some great advice from my father. And he goes, Michelle. And I'm like, what? Like, so excited for whatever he's going to say that's going to make me feel better. And he goes, you have got to stop saying like. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go, Dad. Bye. I was so mad. Like, you are not the person who I want to talk to for 20 minutes when I'm in tears. He did not even realize what he said wrong. I was like, okay, there's no getting through to you, Father.
That's great. But
it
was
great. You've got to stop saying like.
But it was great advice.
Yeah. Thanks, Dad. He's like, I'm like, Dad, I need advice on life, not saying like. You're not my speech coach. He's like, I don't know how you get through your stories on air without saying like.
Oh, how funny. Yeah. You know, but that's what we parents do.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
gotta love them.
It's part of the contract, you know.
Yeah. Thankful.
You get it
if he doesn't say it, someone else will never. So I'm glad that he did.
Yes. So I want to wrap it up with this. What do you see, and this could be you may not be able to answer this question, because we're sitting in your office right now. What do you see as your next chapter?
Great question. What do I see? What do I want? What do I expect?
Yeah.
Those are all different.
Okay, let's go with want, expect, see.
Oh, so three answers. Okay, cool. I'm just going to encompass all of them and say that if you had asked me that a year ago, I would have told you exactly what I wanted next. And at this point, what I've learned is, first of all, I'm extremely happy where I am, and I'm not just saying that because I'm sitting with a Fox Sports San Diego sign behind me. I'm not saying that to say it. I genuinely am so happy. My bosses know that. I've turned down jobs to stay here. I've also taken interviews, and on those interviews thought how scary it would be to leave where I am because I'm so happy. But I'm always willing to grow, and I always want to grow, and I'd love to grow here. If that's what my future is, I'm happy. I love being able to connect with a specific team. what I do is different than what a sports reporter at a news station does, or a sports reporter at ESPN, or a sports reporter at CBS Right. Sports. It's, I have a team partnership here. And so my job is to cover this specific team. It's a beat is what it is essentially. And I like that. But I'm always open to anything that either my bosses here throw at me, or if they think an opportunity is better for me somewhere else, I know that they would tell me that too. The people I work for are very understanding and always want my best interest, which I appreciate more than anything.
That's great.
Yeah.
What a great place to work.
I know. I'm so thankful. Seriously.
Yeah. You're really,
I pinch myself every day.
You're really fortunate because not everybody can say that about their job.
I know.
As you know, most people are actually dissatisfied with their job.
Right.
But that's nice. But you know, I think I want to wrap it up with this kind of with this overview of, if you want to have a great future, a fun future, your own future, and if you want to do that well, it begins with and it depends on doing well what you're doing right now. And if you do that, then opportunities will come. Your promotions may come. Other people may come. But it really is about doing great right now.
Yes, and I'm only 25, so it's not like I have a ton of experience. But from my experience in all aspects of life, I have friends that are doing things and they're like basically happy. They're content and they're making tons of money, but they're not doing what they've always wanted to do. And I genuinely don't comprehend that concept. Like it doesn't make sense to me. I've never gone and done something that I didn't want to do. And I understand that not everyone is as fortunate as I am in the sense of being able to go to college and having the opportunity. I mean, I made next to nothing in Corpus Christi, at least. I mean, luckily there's no state income tax there, but, well, I mean, if I made there what I'm like trying to live here, it wouldn't work. But, I was fortunate in the sense of my dad spotted me the money to move to Corpus Christi. And I understand that not everyone has that. And I'm very fortunate and thankful that I have had that. But my biggest piece of advice for anyone is to do what you want to do, not love what you do and do well at it. It's to do what you want to do and then be good at that too, if that makes sense.
It makes absolute sense. And I'm going to wrap it up with this because I'm all the time asked, people are asking me, because I write about the meaning of life and meaning in life. And I believe of meaning in life rather than the meaning of life. It means you're living your meaning.
Yeah.
And I tell people to think two things. What do you love to do and what makes you excited? If you can answer those two questions, then you know what your next step is.
Yeah, I love that.
All right. Michelle, thank you for being on the show. It's been great having you.
Charlie, thank you so much for having me. I feel so honored.
I got through the interview. I'm really tickled.
You did great.
Thank you. Thank you. So
don't come after my job, please.
No, I could never do
conflict
your
job. Conflict of interest, maybe?
I could never do your job. Yeah, there is a conflict of interest. So everybody, thanks for listening. This is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie. Tune in next week for a brand new guest. Bye for now.